We have a lot of visitors and class members in our class that really aren't here. Mark Havens downloads about 40 hours of classes a week on his iPhone, and then when he goes to work, he plays them. He's here with us all the time. So everybody say to Mark, say hi to Mark Havens in New York. Mark and Janine. And we also have Boris in the state of Washington. And he listens to our classes. He downloads them and listens to many, many, many a week. So say hi to Boris and his family. And then we've got Richard in the Netherlands. Spread all over. Richard in the Netherlands also downloads about 40 hours of our classes a week. So he's actually, there really should be on the rolls on every class we have here. So say hi to Richard in the Netherlands. All right. So we said hi to all of those people today out there. And these are the ones that, I mean, there's thousands of people out there, but these guys are real in-depth students in all of our classes. And Mark called me from New York yesterday and was extremely excited about all of the upgrades we've done from on the website. And he's just thrilled. He's going to start. Pray for him because he wants to start teaching the book of Revelation there. I have done five times I've done the book of Revelation. He said, I think I got it down now. So pray for Mark as he tries to teach the book of Revelation. Go to We'elei Shemot. We'elei Shemot. And Brother Roger, what does that mean?
And these names.
And these names. And these names is what it means. And it's also in the book of Exodus. Exodus comes from what language, the name Exodus? Comes from what language does the book of Exodus come from, the name Exodus? From the Greek Septuagint. All right, now let's go back. We're going to go into Luke, the 20th chapter today. But we got to go back to the Old Testament to get the foundation of where we are in the New Testament. Okay? So let's go to Exodus, the 18th chapter, and verse number 13. And it came about the next day that Moses sat down to judge the people. Now, Jethro has come to visit him with his Moses' wife and his children and everything. And now, the next day, after they come here, says Moses sat down to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses, or before Moses, from morning until evening, from daylight till dark, from the break of day till dark. He's judging all the people. These people have got all kinds of problems. The wives are mad at their husbands, the husbands are mad at the wives, the neighbors are mad at this guy over here in this tent, and so there's all kinds of problems, so Moses is listening to all of their problems. Now Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people. He said, "What is this saying that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as a judge and all the people stand about from morning until evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. And when they have a dispute, it comes to me and I judge between the man and his neighbor and make known the statutes of God and his laws." Verse number 17. And Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you are doing is not good. The thing that you are doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you, and you cannot do it alone. Now listen to me, and I shall give you counsel. And God be with you. You be the representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then teach them that the statutes and the laws, and make known to them the way which they are to walk and the work that they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of all the able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, who shall place these over them as leaders of thousands and hundreds and fifties and tens. And let them judge the people at all times. And let them be at every major dispute they will bring to you, but every minor dispute they will themselves judge. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing God commands you, as God commands you, you will then be able to endure, and all these people also will go to their place in peace. So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he said, and Moses chose able-bodied men of all Israel and made them heads over the people, leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties and tens, and they judged the people at all times. The difficult dispute they would bring to Moses, but every minor dispute they themselves would judge. Then Moses bid his father-in-law farewell, and he went his way into the own land. Now what I just read you to you in the Old Testament, Marilyn, it's a little too noisy. What I just read to you in the Old Testament was the beginning of the Sanhedrin court. That was the establishment of the Sanhedrin court. Now in the New Testament, in Luke, the 20th chapter, we have the death squad. We have the death squad. And here is the death squad. This ended up being the 70 men that judged Israel. Now, there were 23 scribes. You can write this down. This is the Sanhedrin. 23 scribes, 23 priests, and 23 elders, and one high priest, which represented who? Moses. All right? 23 scribes, 23 priests, and 23 elders, and one high priest. Now, this is the death squad. Now, these were supposed to be people that were judging Israel. Marilyn? Please. The death squad.
You want me to pan the camera over there?
No. It's picking her up very strongly. And it came about on one of the days while he was teaching the people in the temple. Now, we covered this last week. And the preaching of the gospel and the chief priests and the scribes and the elders confronted him. Now, here is the whole Sanhedrin court again. The whole Sanhedrin court again is coming to confront Jesus. And these are the people that were supposed to be what? Honorable? Honest? They hated dishonest gain? They couldn't stand dishonesty. And yet, what are these people going to do? They're going to murder the king of Israel. Every one of them, all 70 of them. All 70 now. All right? Go on down now. To Luke 20th, and then 20 and verse 9. 20 and verse 9. And again, we tell the story, the parable of the vine growers. Now, we covered this a little bit last week, but we have to remember this as we go on any further. And it says, "And he began to tell the people this parable. And a man planted a vineyard and rented it out to vine growers and went on a journey for a long time." Now, these are the people that's trying to kill Jesus. Now, Jesus is going to turn around and he's going to tell a story about them. He's going to turn the tables on them, and he's going to see what they are representing. "And at the harvest time, he sent a slave to the vine growers in order that they might give him some of the produce of the vineyard. But the vine growers beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he proceeded to send another slave, and they beat him also and treated him shamefully, and he sent him away empty-handed." Now, what Jesus is doing here is he's representing Israel as the sharecroppers. And God sent prophets to Israel, and they wouldn't listen. And they beat the prophets. They murdered the prophets. They sent them away. They treated them shamefully. "And he proceeded to send a third, and this one also they wounded and cast him out. And the owner of the vineyard," which is who? Who's the owner of the vineyard?
God.
God's the owner of the vineyard. "What shall I do? Will I send my beloved son? Perhaps they will respect him. But when the vine growers saw him, they reasoned with one another, saying, 'This is the heir. Let us murder him, that the inheritance may be ours. That the inheritance may be ours.' Now, we have another place in the scriptures that says when they were starting to deal with Jesus, they looked at Jesus and they said, this man is going to take our nation away from us. He's going to take our laws away from us. Let's kill him. And I read to you many times in the past Pilate's letter condemning the Jews for the way they shamefully treated their king. And when Pilate, when they demanded that he would be crucified, Pilate, in his own handwriting, took a piece of paper or a piece of wood, and he wrote in it, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, and he wrote it in three languages. Remember what those three languages were? Latin, Hebrew, and Greek. Latin, Hebrew, and Greek. And then they demanded that he change it. He said, what I have written, I have written. Peddle your beans to somebody else. And then they asked him for a guard to guard the tomb so Jesus could not raise from the dead. And he said, you have a temple guard, you have a guard, go do the best you can. I'm finished with you. So they were denounced by Pontius Pilate, the civil leader of the land. And they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Now, let's talk about the Son of God. Therefore will the owner of the vineyard do to them. What will the owner of the vineyard do to them? And he will come and destroy these vine growers and give the vineyard to others. And that's where he comes. The God, the Son, comes. They murder the Son. And then he hands the baton. He hands the administration of authority to the church, which will become a Gentile church. Going a little bit further. And when they heard it, they said, may it never be. But he looked at them and said, when then is this that is written, the stone which the builders rejected, this became the chief cornerstone. Jesus always spoke of what kind of terms, not carpenter terms, but what kind of terms? Brick mason terms, Masonic terms, masons. And that's what he's using here. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces, but whoever it falls, it will scatter them like dust. Now, in verse 19, is where we come to the lessons we have today. And the scribes and the chief priests tried to lay hands on him that very hour, and they feared the people, for they understood that he spoke this parable against them. Now they know that he's talking about them. Now they're mad more. This is the death squad, remember? This is the Sanhedrin. 23 scribes, 23 priests, and 23 elders, and one high priest, which is representing Moses, the high priest. Now, all of these people were against Jesus, and they are supposed to be the legitimate leaders of this land. And they watched him and sent spies. Look at this. Look how honest they are. Go back again to the book of Exodus. Go back to the book of Exodus again. And verse number 21 in the 18th chapter. Furthermore, you shall select out of the people able men who fear God. Look at that. Who fear God. Men of truth. Those who hate dishonest gain. And you shall place those over them as leaders of thousands and hundreds and fifties and tens. And this would turn into the Sanhedrin court, which was now nothing but a death squad. Nothing but a Jewish mafia. That's all it was at this period of time. The scribes and the chief priests tried to lay hands on him that very hour, and they feared the people, for they understood that he spoke this parable against them. Verse number 20 now. And they watched him. That word watch there, it means that they... Have you ever heard of these private detectives that go out and watch people, investigate, and spy on people? That's exactly what they're doing. They've got spies all over watching Jesus. They watched him and sent spies who pretended to be righteous. Remember what Exodus said? Righteous, just men. These people pretended to be righteous in order that they might catch him in some statement. I'm reminded of something that happened so many years ago, about 1905, I think, somewhere around that period of time. A bunch of cattlemen in Wyoming hired a man by the name of Tom Horn. He was an interpreter for the Indian, the Apache Wars. He was Geronimo's friend. He respected Geronimo greatly. He helped bring Geronimo in. One time when one of the generals went in there, this general wanted one of his interpreters to speak to Geronimo. And Geronimo sat there and would not speak to that interpreter at all. He told him he wasn't going to. He had his men say he will only interpret through Tom Horn this time because he trusts Tom Horn. If Tom Horn lies, I will kill Tom Horn. Simple as that. But I know Tom Horn will lie. So they sat there, and the general kept asking over and over again, asking Geronimo a question, and Geronimo would not answer one word. Finally, he gave up and told his interpreter, let Tom Horn sit here. And so Tom Horn asked him, and he answered the question. He knew that these other people were sold out. Sold out. So they sent spies like this, these so-called friends. Have you ever had a friend that turned around and cut your throat? Chopped you up in little pieces that you thought was your friend? Or they might catch him in some statement so as to deliver him to the rule and the authority of the governor. Tom Horn went out and he started killing these in Wyoming, and he started killing these cattle rustlers because that's what they paid him to do. You know, you can either bring them into justice or you can shoot them. Well, the ones, he went out there and they knew he was a stock detective, so they shot at him. So he shot back and killed him. Over and over again, he killed quite a few people. And then they got embarrassed over how many people he had killed. So they hired a sheriff to do a plant. And there were two sheep herders feuding up there. And this one sheep herder had a girlfriend, and this other boy was very young, and this girl was interested in the boy. So the guy goes out there and he shoots this boy. So the sheriff, he goes out there and plants one of Tom Horn's a shell, a .45-60, like he shot. And the kid is shot. Make sure the kid is shot with a .45-60. And then he places a rock under the kid's head and the shell right there. And they said Tom Horn did it. Then when they were, Tom Horn went to town in the wintertime, everything in there, and the sheriff was supposed to, by payment, he was supposed to catch Tom Horn these words, so he had a stenographer in the back room writing down everything that Tom Horn said, and they were going to take it and twist it up. They got Tom Horn over there, and he was drunk. And the sheriff asked him, he said, did you kill that boy? And he said, no. He said, if I had killed him, he said, that was the best shot I ever did and the dirtiest deed I ever did if I'd have done it. But he said, I didn't do it. And the stenographer wrote down that this is the best shot I ever made and the dirtiest deed I ever did. And they gave that evidence to the court of this stenographer. And all the time, this girl's putting her hand up, hey, I want to testify. My boyfriend shot that kid. And then when they chose the jury, they chose the jury out of the families of the men that he had killed. So what you call a kangaroo court. The people of Wyoming were very upset about this. They hung Tom Horn. All the time, this girl trying to say, he didn't do it, my boyfriend did it. They would not allow her to testify at all. They would not allow real evidence in the court. So now we have another kangaroo court, another death squad, way back here, way before Tom Horn's time. And they kept on questioning him, saying, teacher, teacher, we know that you speak and teach correctly. You are not partial in any way, but teach the way of God and truth. Now, what did it say back in the book of Exodus? Choose out men that speak the truth and love the truth and hate lies and hate falsehood. Verse number 22. It is lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not. So they figure that they're going to get him on this now. They sat down and they've gone over these questions. And Brother Roger, what do Jews do? What do they like to do?
Argue
and talk. That's what they do. The whole life is over arguing and talking. And they had sat down and say, what can we say to him? What way can we do it? Now you go as a plant and you ask him these questions and then we got him. Now we've heard this story a lot of times, verse number 23. But he detected their trickery. Trickery. Who's the greatest trickster of all time?
Satan.
They're doing the works of their father, the devil. The deceiver. Their arum in Hebrew. The evil one. The deceiving one. The snake in the Old Testament is called the deceiving one. And God didn't create that snake to be deceptive. But he became deceiving one because he allowed, by volition, Satan to come into him and use him. He said, show me a day's wages. What would be a day's wages today? What's a day's wages today? Anybody know? Huh?
Today, probably, on average, in Bakersfield, probably $144.
About $144 a day. Well, this would be like $144 because this denarius here is a day's wages. Okay? So it's a pretty good sized coin. $144. Okay? A big silver dollar. Or a little bitty gold coin. All right? Show me a denarius, a day's wages, whose likeness and inscription does it have on it? Now, a dollar bill's got whose likeness on it?
President.
All right? Has anybody got a dollar bill?
Jackson?
Huh? Anybody got a dollar bill? Whose likeness is on that dollar bill, brother?
George.
George Washington. That's right. George Washington. All right. And Grant's on one, and Jackson on one. Jackson's on what bill? $20 bill. All right. He's on the $20 bill. Anyway, there's likenesses of the presence.
On the $100 bill.
Who is? Who?
Chase.
Jackson. Jackson's on the $20 bill. Okay, Grant's on the 50. Anyway, all of them have likenesses on it. So we still do this same thing today, don't we? We still have likenesses of our leaders. It says, show me a denarius. Whose likeness and inscription does it have on it? And Jesus knew. And they said, Caesar's. All right, Caesar's. And he said to them, then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. In other words, pay your taxes. This is the government's over you. The Roman government has authority over you. And by the way, God allowed the Roman government to have authority over them, didn't he? That's right. God allowed that. God worked it around. Did God allow Alexander the Great to come into power? So he could spread the Greek language, and so that the Old Testament scriptures could be translated into the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament scriptures, and what else? That the New Testament could be written in Koine Greek, which is the most perfect language that ever was. And they were unable to catch him in saying in the presence of the people and marveling at his answer, and they became silent. They were unable to catch him. In a saying in the presence of the people, marveling at his answer. They were struck out of their senses at his answer. Now let's go on. We're going to get another political group of people now. Jesus is going to apprehend and try another group. By the way, what did Jesus just prove to the Sanhedrin? You're impotent to fight against me. Unless Jesus allowed them to do something to him, they could have never caught him. All right? Verse number 27. Luke 20:27. And now there came to him some of the Sadducees, who say that there is no resurrection. The Sadducees, there's an old story. The Sadducees don't believe in resurrection. They don't believe in eternal life. They don't believe in angels. They don't believe anything spiritual at all. And when you put them in the grave, they're sad, you see, because they will never rise again.
They're atheists.
Huh? They're atheists, basically, yes. But they believe in morality. That's all. Now, these guys come to Jesus. All right? These atheists, these non-believers, now, this is a great party. This is a major party in Israel at this time, as it is today. You have the Pharisees today in Israel. Which ones would we call those? Who are the Pharisees today?
The Orthodox.
The Orthodox Jews. Those are the ones that are Pharisees today. And who are the Sadducees?
Knesset.
Those that, you know, they're basically are ruling Israel. Anyway, the Sadducees now are on the spot. These people, all they are is political. That's all, just political. Nothing but politics. But they use the name of God. They use the parables and scriptures to get what they want. Now they're going to come to Jesus and make fun of Him. These people are going to ridicule Jesus. And Jesus is going to turn their words back upon them again. If you have any atheists or agnostic friends, this is the direction to go. Right here. These people did not believe in any what we call supernatural life or any theistic creation at all. Only that we evolved and we got here. Humankind must have a moral order. That's what they believe. Without a moral order, you have what? Chaos and anarchy. So they believed in order. But even in believing in order, then they must say, well, we have to go back to God's rules and God's laws. Of course, they thought they evolved from the Hammurabi and the Kamarabi. All right? I won't explain that to you for right now, but let's go on verse. And they questioned him, saying, Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies having a wife, and he is childless, and his brother should take up the wife and raise up offspring to his brother. Now this is an old joke. What you're reading here is a joke. That's all. This was a joke that was passed around among the Sadducees. Jesus knew the joke. But now he's going to turn the joke upon them. They would tell this joke, they'd tell this story, and they'd laugh among themselves because they didn't believe in the afterlife at all. Now there were seven brothers. Do you know any family that has seven brothers in it? There are some. All right. I knew a family out there in Fairfax that had 21 kids. 21 children. Boy, they had a lot of talk about a war in a house. Tear the house down.
The dad was a truck driver,
right? I don't know. I don't remember now. I remember there was 21 kids, and I tell you what, they were forced to be dealt with.
He drove trucks opposite of what my dad drove.
Really? All right. There you go. There's the history of that. Mr. Story. And now there were seven brothers, and the first took a wife and died childless. And the second... And the third took her, and in the same way, all seven died, leaving no children. Now, remember, they don't believe one word they're saying. Okay? This is a joke. Finally, the woman died also. In the resurrection, the Anastasia. Say Anastasia. That means to stand again, Anastasia. In the resurrection, therefore, which one's wife shall she be? For all seven had her as wife. She was a wife to all of these. Now, where is she going to be? Whose wife is she going to be? And Jesus said to them, the sons of this age marry and are given in marriage. The sons of this age. The children of this age marry and are given in marriage. Now, I wish the Mormon church had this in their Bible. Right here. Okay? The Mormon church, the whole Mormon church system is based upon having children and having as many wives as you can have in this world right now, and then going over there and every child that is aborted naturally or whatever, every miscarriage, every child that dies, you get to raise again over there. And you have this great big family because every man is a god. As simple as that. But those who are considered worthy to attain to this, to that age, the resurrection of the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. They neither marry nor are given in marriage. I don't know what they're going to do with this verse right here. Verse number 36, for neither they die anymore, for they are like angels. They're like angels. Does any angel ever die? Has there ever been a dead angel? You ever seen an angel grave? Anybody ever gone and found an angel grave in place? They don't. Angels don't die. When you're over there, you don't die. Okay?
Their offspring die.
The angels' offspring die?
Yeah, the ones
that
come down, the Nephilim.
Yeah, some of them died, but they have spirits that live forever, don't they? Their spirits, their souls live.
Body dies,
yeah, the body can die. And they're not easy to kill either. You just ask David that when you get over there. David tried to kill five of them. And one of them almost got him. He went out there to kill five of them at one time when he took those five stones, all the brothers of Goliath. Goliath and his brothers. For neither they die anymore, for they are like angels and are sons of God, being sons in the resurrection. Verse number 37, but that the dead are raised, even Moses showed the passage about the burning bush, where he calls the Lord the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, as far as the Sadducees are concerned, these people may have lived or may not have lived. Did you know that? It didn't matter whether they lived or whether they didn't live. But they're gone and they're dead, just like many people look at a dog. When he dies, he dies. Okay? Bury it, put him in the ground, and no more dog. But dogs have souls also, and so does every living thing. We don't know all of we don't have all the evidence on all of that. But people think that animals, when they die, they just go away. And these Sadducees believe that when you die, you're dead. The Seventh-day Adventist and the Jehovah's Witness and the Garner Ted Armstrong, Worldwide Church of God, and Herbert Armstrong, Worldwide Church of God, they all believe in soul sleeping. That when you die, you just go into oblivion. If you're not righteous enough, you don't get to go to the resurrection. And you just sleep on forever. And there's no hell or anything like that. But I'm going to tell you something. When you cease from this life, you're conscious in the next life in that moment. 1 second after you die, you're either in heaven or in Hades. There is no limbo in between.
Atheism is only temporary.
Yeah. There are no atheists in hell. There are no atheists in heaven. I can assure you. Now he is not the God of the dead, but the God of the living. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are not dead. They're not just integrated. Their bodies may be down there at Machpelah in Hebron, but he said their spirits are not dead. And of course, they don't believe this. Okay? Now, he's not the God of the dead, but the God of the living. All live in him. Verse number 39 now. And some of the scribes answered and said, Teacher, you have spoken well. For they do not have courage to question him about anything further. They don't have courage. They already have been put on the spot, and they've already been told, hey, there is an afterlife. God is the God of eternities. God is the God of the living, not the dead. And everybody has eternal life, so now that subject with the Sadducees is over. And he said to them, how is it that they say Christ is David's son? He's talking to them now. Jesus is interrogating them. They came to interrogate him. Now he's interrogating them. And he said, how is it that they say Christ is David's son? In the book of Matthew, we have the lineage of Jesus going back to his kingly lineage, don't we? Back to the throne of David. And then in the book of Luke, we have Mary's lineage going back also. For David himself says in the book of Psalms, "The Lord said to my Lord." The Lord said to my Lord. This also is something you can take with the Jehovah Witnesses that don't believe that Jesus is Jehovah. "The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet." Now back in the Ancient of Days, when a king conquered a land, he took the king that was there before and they put him on the ground and he put his foot on his throat. Many times cut his head off or killed him, or else he was subject to him, one or the other. If he didn't subject himself, he was a dead man. Okay? And that's what it's talking about. All those that have opposed Jesus, all of those that are going to oppose Jesus right now are going to meet an untimely end. Verse number 44. "David therefore calls him Lord. How is he his son?" David calls Jesus Lord. That's what it's talking about. David calls me, his son, Lord. Now, there is no word for grandson in Hebrew, is there, Brother Roger? So, Jesus is literally a son of David. Why does David call me Lord? And how would that, what word that would that be in Hebrew, Brother Roger? Adonai or Jehovah. Verse number 45. "And while the people were still listening, he said to his disciples," now he speaks to his disciples, which are, what is his disciples? When we talk about disciples, who are they? This is his called out assembly, which is what we call church. The word church really should be replaced by the word assembly. This is his assembly, his little church that he called out by the Sea of Galilee. "Beware of the scribes." The Sanhedrin. 23 scribes. 23 priests. 23 elders. And one high priest, which makes up the Sanhedrin, the 70. The 70. All right. "Beware of the scribes." And what was a scribe, Brother Bill?
Tax collectors, politicians.
A politician, but what part did he play? What?
County clerk.
A county clerk. And every synagogue was a courthouse. And the court recorder, the county clerk, and every synagogue was a scribe. And they wrote down all of the legal contracts between everybody, even if you were going to trade a pot for a donkey. Or engage your daughter to some guy. I'll never forget the story about Brother Brett when he were always trying to get Brother Brett a girlfriend and all this kind of stuff. And he said, "Brother Bill, your granddaughter looks really, really good." And he said, "Oh, no." That really comes close to your heart then, doesn't it?
Half his age.
"Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in robes." They like to walk around in robes. What did the robes say on them? What did the robes have on these scribes? What kind of robes? They're talking dresses, but what's on the bottom of the dress, the bottom of the robes? Brother Randall, you remember that?
Their genealogy.
They're proud of their genealogy, who I am. My grandfather was a scribe, and my great-grandfather was a scribe, and all this kind of stuff. They go on and on and on, and they go right back to what tribe they come from. Look who I am. They walk around in long robes and love respectful greetings in the marketplace. And they would say over and over again, "Oh, hello, son of so-and-so." And they just brag on each other back and forth, just go on and on about how wonderful that our families are. My family's this and your family's this. And aren't we glad that we're around each other? Respectful greetings in the marketplaces. Chief seats in the synagogues. In a synagogue, everybody bought a seat. In a church house, where you go into a church house, you just go sit in the pew. How many of you people bought a pew in that church house over there? Anybody? Anybody buy a pew over there? Yeah. Well, I bought one. It cost $1,500 for a pew. And I think we donated $1,500 and bought a pew when they did that. And I know a lot of other families here. We bought a pew, but I don't know whether I ever sat in it or not. The one I bought. I don't know which one it is. But when you go to a synagogue, you buy a pew. And that is your pew, and nobody else can sit in it. Who loved the chief seats in the synagogue, the one right up close. And the places of honor at banquets. And that's what Jesus kept talking about. When they'd have a banquet, they wanted to sit at the head of the table. They wanted the big shots. They wanted to be the ones that talked. And then verse number 47. But I want you to go back, before we read verse number 47, go back into the book of Exodus. Again, back into the book of Exodus. Verse number 20 of the 18th chapter. Then teach them the statutes and the laws. Make known to them the way in which they are to walk, and the work which they are to do. And furthermore, you shall select out of the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain. And you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands and of hundreds and fifties and tens, and this is the Sanhedrin court. Now this is who Jesus is talking to right here. Again, in verse number 47. Jesus opens the door to another avenue of teaching, and then he'll get inside to that room, and then he'll open another door in there, and you just keep seeing more and more and more. You keep going places that didn't even know was there. Who devour widows' houses for appearance' sake, offer long prayers. Remember the story of the Pharisee and the publican, the tax collector standing on the corner, and the Pharisee was standing up there bragging on himself, telling God how good he was, and the tax collector said, "Oh Lord," he wouldn't even raise his eyes up to heaven. The other one was looking right up into heaven, holding his hands up. And the tax collector would not even lift his eyes up, and he beat on his chest and say, "Oh Lord, forgive me, a sinner." Now, who devour widows' houses? They were long. They were wrong. They were unjust, weren't they? Very unjust. Who devours widows' houses for the sake offer long prayers. They cheat the widows out of their inheritance. And these will receive greater condemnation, greater judgment in the end of time. Chapter 21, we go right from there to the widows. We go right where he opens the door inside of that room to this widow that had been cheated out of everything she has. And now we're going to see that widow that they cheated. This is a victim of their horrible crimes, this woman. Now we're going to see the victim. Verse 21, chapter 21, verse 1. And he looked up and saw the rich putting gifts into the treasury. Now you have to remember that in the treasury, this is out around, as you look over here, out in this court here is the treasury, out here. People would walk in there and they had what a trumpet looks like? Randall, you played trumpets. And that trumpet rings, doesn't it? Or not trumpet, but trombone. It rings. It's got a big funnel, and they had these big funnel devices like that, and they would walk by, and they'd drop their coins in there, and the heavier the coin, the more noise it would make. playing all the way down. And that is the story right here. They're putting their gifts into the treasury. Verse number 2, and he saw a poor widow. A poor widow that was made poor by these people, by this Sanhedrin court. And he said, truly, truly, I say to you, this poor widow. Now it said, she saw this poor widow putting in two small copper coins. That's what we call widow's mite. That is the smallest denomination of coins in the land of Israel. And he said, truly, truly, I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all of them, than all the rich. Because she had been robbed. She had everything taken from them by them. They made her poor. For they all, out of their surplus, put into the offering. Surplus. What's surplus? Brother Mike, what's the surplus?
More than you need.
More than you need. That's what people usually save, is their surplus. If you have more money than what you need to put food on your table to pay your bills, that's surplus. Okay? Now, out of the surplus, people give. But they won't take it right out of their living. If you take money that would buy your food, pay your bills, and give it to the Lord, now that is serious, isn't it? That's serious giving. That's serious giving. But they all out of their surplus put in their offering. But she, out of her poverty that was created by these people, put in all that she had to live on. In other words, that day she won't have anything to eat. This day she won't have any food. No breakfast, no lunch, no dinner. She is going to go without food at all because of her offering. Now, this happened a long time ago, didn't it? How long ago? 2,000 years ago, nearly. Nearly 2,000 years ago. And Jesus makes an example of this widow that had been robbed. She was robbed by these people, by the Sanhedrin, by the scribes and the synagogues. Wherever she was, whatever local synagogue she went to, her inheritance was taken from her. And she was robbed. Right up here it says, who devour, in verse number 7, who devour widows' houses. For she put in all that she had to live on. And some were talking about the temple. That is, adorned with beautiful stones and vaulty gifts, he said. As for these things which you are looking at, the days will come when there will be not left one stone upon another which will not be torn down. And they kept on interrogating him, saying, Teacher, when therefore will these things be? And what will be the sign when these things are about to take place? And he said, see to it that you're not misled, for many will come in my name and say, I am he. And the time is at hand. Do not go after them. The most radical thing about false religions and cults is about their idea and their view of eschatology, isn't it? They all have some wonderful message of what's going to happen. And they're going to be those that are on the good side, and everybody else is going to be on the bad side. You know, the Jehovah's Witnesses, how many times did they predict the coming, and Harold Camping, and the Seventh-day Adventists, and this is all they think about. I teach about the second coming, but I don't dwell on it, do I? Because it hasn't happened yet, but it can threaten to happen at any time. And when you hear about wars and disturbances, do not be terrified. For these things must take place first, but the end does not follow immediately. Well, there you are. Do you have any questions? Do you have any questions about this class today? We'll start off from there next week. Young lady, do you have any questions? No? Brother Roger? Brother Mike, you got any questions about this? How about it, Randall? Something in this intriguing you? Brother Bill? No questions?
Yeah, I wonder if my head was to stop that.
All right. Well, now we don't have... Oh, you're going to come up here. All right.
As you probably don't know this, the church I come from, some of them you know, is a Free Will Baptist Church.